You wouldn't believe it. We're having some technology problem. No. The system that was working pretty much perfectly just decided to go on strike. So, some of you were with us for the weekend, the holiday, and some of you were not. And we'll just do a little summary of the whole weekend. We're discussing five chapters from Canto 4, Srimad Bhagavatam, on the topic of Dhruva Maharaj. Celebrated section of the Bhagavatam. It's not only in the Bhagavatam, it's in many other Puranas, different iterations of that wonderful pastime, but most outstanding and very beautiful is Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of the personality of Godhead Bhagavan and his dear devotee, Dhruva. And just a setting is, we're at the very early stages of creation, not just Satya Yuga, but the first Satya Yuga in the life of Swayambhuva Manu. What that means is there's different creations and annihilations, and that there's at the end of every day of Brahma, which lasts for 14 manus, which is 1,000 yuga cycles, that's one day of Brahma, that's a lot of years, there's his night, and there's during his night, there's a partial devastation. The partial devastation is the planets from Svarga down. First there's a big drought, then there's a big fire, and then there's a big flood. That's a natural sequence. Everything gets dry, then it burns, and then it just becomes flooded. For the night of Brahma, which is equal as the duration of the day of Brahma, and then he does his morning sadhana, and then he recreates that portion of the universe that was destroyed the next morning. That's the partial devastation. And then there's the total devastation. That's when everything is withdrawn back within the body of Mahavishnu for equal duration as the creation, and then the cycle turns again. Again, creation. So we're at the beginning of creation. We heard, for those of you that are familiar with Bhagavatam, it's just putting everything in context. There's the Sarga, that's Vishnu's function of creation. There's Vis-Sarga, that's Brahma's function of creation. And then those are two of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. And then there's the Manus, the givers of law for mankind, and then the filling up of the universe. Because there's a purpose for the universe. It's to give living entities an opportunity, A or B, try to fulfill their illusory material desire, which will never happen. So the world of illusion is created for such mistaken persons. And the other is to correct them and give them the opportunity to experience the fullness of happiness and fullness of consciousness, especially epitomized in the human form of life. That's our human mission. Fullness of consciousness. That's our mission, having this human form of life. And so, to fill up the universe, he, from his own body, Brahma, without the assistance of anyone other than Vishnu, he creates different entities. Among them are the first Manu and his wife. Very interestingly, they're created in an adult form. He's got a mustache. It's a whole, it's not the normal birth of a child. From his own body. They're not just brother, sister, it's husband, wife. and then they, with folded palms, come before him. This is Canto 3. What's our service? And he gives them service. So then they fulfill their service. Laws of mankind is one. And help me fill up the universe I just created. So it's yes, sir. And Manu, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa have two sons and three daughters. That starts the whole procedure. In Canto 3, the eldest of the three sisters, Devahuti, Prasuti and Akuti, they're the other two sisters, speak about her primarily because she marries Kardama Muni, and Kardama Muni and Devahuti have nine daughters. Those nine daughters are then given to different sages who take their assistance as in Prajapati service to Manu, and one son. Son is Lord Kapila, son of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. A long section towards the end of Canto 3 about Kapila and Kapila's Sankhya philosophy and so on. And the beginning of Chapter 4, which is where this section comes, there are several other details of the sub-creation of Brahma and the populating of the universe. And then this section begins with Chapter 8, and there's five chapters, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. So that's what we discussed. And this is just a summary of all of that, the journey of Dhruva. So there's the story, and then there's teachings that are important for us to learn. Again, just some appreciation for how great souls give teachings. Maybe some of you know. The year that Srila Prabhupada was born was 1896. And that very same year that he was born was the year that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent in English language at his own expense, a small booklet in English sent to universities all around the world, the life, that's, you know, the journey, and the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the life and precepts, the life and precepts. So the first part is Chaitanya Charitamrita summarized, and the second part is precepts, is what Bhaktisiddhanta distilled down to 10 essential teachings. Of course, he gave it a Sanskrit name, Dasamula. Mula means root. So 10 essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya that covers the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 topics. Only the terminology is different, the categorization is different. It's the same principle as what you see here. There's teachings and there's the life. So we'll speak about the journey and we'll try to highlight some of the essential lessons that we heard and like to share that with you. So let's see here. There's the image that we used for this presentation on the life of Prahlad Maharaj. Excuse me, Dhruva Maharaj. And it's not cooperating. Okay, you can do it manually. You're going to need that little device hooked in so you can see, but now it just went. But he did it over there. Technology is great when it works. And when it doesn't work, it's another story. How are we going to do this? What do you want me to do? You'll do it manually, but how's it going to work? I tell you when. I'll just say next and you do it, right? Okay, lovely. Next. So this is a little chronology. He starts down there in the lower left, little boy, and then he goes off to the forest to do his austerities. And then Lord Vishnu comes and he offers his prayers to Vishnu. That fourth image is after Uttam, he becomes killed by the Yakshas, or by a Yaksha, his brother. He has a big battle with the Yakshas. And then the final slide is he goes back to Godhead. So the Dhruva story line is very relevant to all of us, relevant for all of us, because it's going from mixed to pure devotion. If there's anybody here that's a pure devotee, you're very special, but most of the rest of us are not. There's some devotion and there's some other stuff. And the other stuff is the mix part. And that's where Dhruva was in the beginning. And he moved from mixed to unmixed. And that's, you know, an important essence of the story. So the way the story begins, next, is the image tells a lot. Look at the body language of Suruchi. That's his stepmother. And Suruchi sees Dhruva trying to get on the lap along with her son. So she's the second wife, and she's the favorite. And the first wife is the mother of Dhruva, and she's neglected. She's so neglected, she's not even in the palace, she's off somewhere, he doesn't even know where, and doesn't even really care where. She's, you know, in a bad situation. And the younger queen knows it. She's his favorite. And so, just paraphrasing, when little Dhruva is trying to also get on the lap of his father, he says five, she says some very harsh things that I don't even know if a little boy is going to understand what she says. You have to die and take birth again from my womb, be able to get on your father's lap as well as the throne, because he's the eldest son. And so the eldest son becomes the next king, but she's really brazen. You will not become the next king, nor will you even sit on your father's lap unless you take birth from my womb. And there's only one way to do that. You have to die. And before you die, you worship the personality of Godhead, become really fixed up. And if you're really fortunate, you'll die. And then if you're even more fortunate, you'll take birth from my womb, and then you can sit on your father's lap. So there. And yeah, that wasn't very nice. So he turned to his father. And his father didn't want to say anything because he liked his second queen, and if he said something, she might not talk to him or something. So he abandons his duty as a father and as a king, and just pretends like she didn't say anything. And that hurt Dhruva double. And so, next, Dhruva ran to his mother, Suniti, in some distant place, and he was crying and crying, and people that had been in the palace and heard the whole and saw the whole thing told his mother, and you can imagine how his mother felt. the details are described. There was abundant negative emotion. She felt really hurt by her co-wife or co-queen. She felt really badly for her son, and she felt helpless. Because what could she do? She had no influence with her husband and Suruchi, and she's on the outs. She considered very carefully, and then she described, next, what was important for Dhruva. So she gave some nice lessons to Dhruva. The first one, next, is don't wish ill of your stepmother. Next, the image. Because if you get caught in amangalam is the Sanskrit word. Amangalam is wishing ill upon others. That'll come back to you. And another reading of this that our acharyas give is, you were harsh to someone, now you're getting the fruit of your having been harsh to someone. Yes? You do an act of kindness to others, that kindness comes back. You do an act that's giving pain and suffering to others, the pain and suffering comes back. Law of karma, she's teaching him. So don't wish ill, because it's going to come back. Don't do that. Because he's in this reacting mode, as you see on the image on the upper left. This was one of the themes. Respond when there's some unfortunate circumstance that comes into your life. You're walking along the path of life, and then unexpectedly something happens. Prabhupada calls it a reversal, that kind of thing. You're going forward, and next thing you know, head-on collision, you're going backwards. A reversal by material nature. And it hurts. We were saying, this is a stress management way. Life throws rocks at you, and it hurts. And then you have some choices. You can react, pick up the rock, and throw it back wherever it came from. Or scream and yell and carry on and or just feel sad and bad and lonely and, oh, how unfortunate. You can do all those things. Or you can go into this mode of goodness place, take shelter of higher principles, and go there. So she's training her son to go there. Don't react. Don't make the mistake. But instead, better that you respond. And she says, don't get caught in envy and enmity. That'll destroy everything. Pride destroys everything. Envy destroys everything. Don't do that. You have a desire for kingdom. And his little boy desire wasn't just his father's kingdom. He was in this kshatriya mode. Not just kingdom better than my father, better than my father's father, better than my father's father's father. That's what I want. I'll show them. So his father's father is Manu. And his father's father's father is Brahma. And he wants a kingdom better than Brahma? What does he know? He's a little five-year-old boy. I want a kingdom better than anybody. And any of Brahma's sons, and that's what I want. And his mother didn't just pat him on the head and said, there, there, that's a little boy desire. He wanted to know from her how to get that kingdom. And he said, well, Vishnu can give you. Only Vishnu can do what, he can achieve anything. She says, Brahma achieved what he achieved, the creator of the universe, by worship of Vishnu. And his son, Manu, achieved what he achieved by offering sacrifices and giving in charity to Vishnu. Sacrifices to Vishnu and charity to everybody, and he got the post. So you want this out of this world desire fulfilled. I don't know any other place besides Vishnu that you can achieve that. Very good. How do I find Vishnu? No, this isn't the language in the Bhagavatam, but it just makes the story go smoothly. I'm just a lady. I live in the palace here, and I hear sages, they go to the forest, and somehow they find Vishnu. Take shelter of Vishnu. Become his devotee. He'll help you. Dhruva considers. And next, he decides to go to the forest. Next. So, back. Back, please. Ooh, there. On the left, that's the forest. And when he gets to the forest, word spreads. Hey, the king, the son of King Uttanapada went to the forest looking for Vishnu. So, within the heart of Narada, he then becomes inspired by Supersoul to go find Dhruva. And he finds him in the forest. And Dhruva is really happy to see him. You know, he knows who Narada is. He hasn't met him before, but he is from this royal family, and they know who Narada is. They're a family of great devotees. So Narada comes before him. And next, Narada places his hand, agha gnena panani. He places his hand on Dhruva's head, and the verse says his hand is very powerful. It's just the touch of Narada. All that is sinful is driven away. And he gives his blessing. Next. Then Dhruva says what he wants. He wants his kingdom. And Narada gives him some tests. So at the top, next. This is the second key. We're going to review these keys. So it's Dhruva expresses very directly, very honestly, his determination, childish as it is. Narada examines his determination, and he concludes he's really determined. Now, there's many examples of this. Because of time, I won't go into it so much. But Narada always wants to see what is the real quality of the person he's interacting with. That's just part of what, if you're going to help somebody, you need to know their capacity. If you're going to address an audience, you need to know the audience. If you're going to extend yourself to another person, you need to know the other person's capacity. So Narada does that. I mean, he's Trikalagya, he has this intuition, but he also examines the veracity or accurateness of his intuition. Well, I won't give examples because of time. But he does that with Dhruva. He concludes, wow, this boy is really determined. He tried to give him other options. He wasn't ready for other options. He just wanted his kingdom. And he requested, next, the back, yes. Sadhu Vartma is the Sanskrit. The honest means is how Prabhupada translates it. Vartma means path, and sadhu means a saintly person. So he doesn't want by hook or crook, he wants a honest means. So the acharyas explain, Narada could just said, okay, here's your kingdom. But that's not the duty of guru, is just hand on a silver platter. He gives the means to achieve, to purify and qualify so that he can achieve. So then he recognizing that, next, he has this intense determination. So he gives him a procedure, an Ashtanga yoga procedure, because it's Satya Yoga, that's the procedure for the age, meditation, dhyayate in Satya Yoga, meditation. So meditation process, an austerity process, a mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So he initiates him into this mantra and tells him, go to Vrindavan, Madhuvan in particular, there near the river Jamuna, bathe in the Jamuna three times daily to sanctify yourself. Follow this procedure, and very soon you'll please Vishnu, and everything that you're desiring will be fulfilled. Dhruva has all faith. He has faith in the words of his mother, who, by the way, is Supermom, and he has faith in the words of Narada. So off he goes. He circumambulates Narada, and then he goes to Madhuvan and does exactly what he told him to do, along with chanting the mantra, this process of meditation. And the way that this is now, this little image is going to appear in the lower left corner, next, there we go, is from Jiva Goswami's writings, which he has drawn from Patanjali Yoga Sutras, which says, when you're doing something that's practice, to be effective, to really be practice, it has to have three parts. It's a nice teaching, I like it, so I'm repeating it. You have to do every day, and you have to do for a prolonged period of time, and you have to do with the faith that it's going to take you to a good place. Or yeah, there's regard for the teacher and the teaching. You have faith. Any one of those three is not going to be fully effective. And if it's you do all three, it may take some time, but it'll get you, it's a vehicle that will get you to where you want to go. Fail safe. You know, trains and planes and cars, you may get you there, may not get you there. They may have a crash, you may, who knows what. But with the bhakti process, it's certain. As Krishna says, one who strives by right means is assured of success. So that assurance alone is success will be there. That assurance alone is a guarantee. Success will be there. So he, Madhuvan, next. Hello, next. Included in the instructions of Narada, you have to control your mind and speech. Be peaceful. This is embedded in the verse of his instruction. Slow down. Be satisfied with eating what is available in the forest. It's really yummy. You'll hear in a moment. Dry leaves that fell to the ground. Meditate on the Lord's transcendental activities. Of course, he grew up in a place where he knew of the Lord's activities. Follow in the footsteps of previous devotees. Purva Sevita. Next. And chant the mantra, with the instruction that this mantra will fulfill all desires. So now he's in Madhavan, and he takes his bath in the river Jamuna. He goes up on top of Dhruva Tila. By the way, for those of you that have not been there yet, there is a place in Vrindavan. It's a hill, not a mountain, but it's a hill. And you go up on the top of the hill, and there's a temple, a Dhruva temple. The main deity is Vishnu. And over here is little Dhruva. And over here is Narada Muni. That's the main altar on top of Dhruva Tila. So it's on that, at that place where he performed his austerities, and this is how he sustained his life. Let's go next, next. Next, next. So, the first month, please, next. Every 3 days he ate something. Kapita fruits, and I read this in the commentary. Kapita fruits are like fruits that monkeys eat. They're really hard, like they break your teeth. But that was what he ate. And berries. And the second month, yummy. Dry grass and leaves once every 6 days. And then third month, water every 9 days. And the fourth month, air every 12 days. He became expert in the breathing process, ongoing, outgoing and ingoing and suspending. And he, remember, he's just 5 years old. Think of a little boy that goes without lunch, then become cranky. He's an exceptional little boy. And then by the fifth month, Dhruva controlled his breath and mind, stood motionless on one foot like a pillar, and meditated on the Lord's form without diversion. So, next, there's the image of his meditation. And as he was suspending his life air, it was so intense that the movement of air in the whole universe was stopped. And the residents of the heavenly planets, they became worried about their controllers of the universe, what to speak of their own breathing. They couldn't breathe. And the whole universe was suffocating. So what did they do? Vishnu, help! So they went to Svetadvipa and they offered their prayers and explained the problem. And basically, Vishnu said, don't worry, he's just a little boy. He has his mind so much concentrated on me that this is why this is happening. I'll go there right away and take care of the problem. I'll have him stop his austerities. So you can go back to your heavenly planets and everything will be nice. Can we go to the next slide? That's that image our ISKCON artist showing. And so then the Lord came to on the back of Garuda from the abode of Vishnu, and Dhruva was meditating in trance upon the form of the Lord in his heart, standing on the whirl of the lotus in his heart, and then suddenly that form disappeared. And he was startled. And when he opened his eyes, he saw that same Lord standing in front of him. So here's a nice description of that form. Next. The form of the Lord, which was brilliant like lightning, and in which Dhruva Maharaj, in his mature yogic practice, process, was fully absorbed in meditation, all of a sudden disappeared. Thus Dhruva was perturbed, and his meditation broke. As soon as he opened his eyes, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead present, just as he had been seeing the Lord in his heart. So this is Paramatma in the heart, is the same as Lord Vishnu in Svetadvipa. See it the other way. the Lord of Svetadvip, the Svetadvip is a spiritual planet that's within this universe. Like Krishna says in chapter 8, Bhagavad Gita, when this world is destroyed, that part remains. Correct? Yes? Krishna says that. So that's the part that remains. It's the Svetadvip. It's Vishnu's planet where he resides and presides within this universe. He came from that place, but it's the same Svetadvip as the abode of Shiradakshay Vishnu, who's also in the heart. No problem, he can be simultaneously here and everywhere. Correct? That's, you know, what's an estimate of how many people are here tonight? Maybe 80 people or something? 80, 90, maybe 100, whatever the number is. How many Paramatmas are here? One. Variously situated. The example given in the Vedas is the sun that's shining and it shines on so many pots that have water. So it looks like there's so many suns in the water pots, but it's only one sun. Like that, in the heart of each one of us is the very same Paramatma. It's nice. We're brothers and sisters. We have the same original father, Aham Bija Pratak Pita, and he's in our heart. He doesn't go anywhere. We go here and there. He doesn't go anywhere. He goes with us. The same one in the hearts of each of us. It's really, really sublime. So that same Vishnu is now standing in front of him. Next. Again and again, Dhruva is in ecstasy. His senses have become purified. His mind has become purified. He's been seeing the Lord in the heart, and now he sees the Lord standing before him. He is thrilled in a spiritual ecstasy, and his body erupts in ecstasy, and he wants to speak nice prayers. Next, it's a verse from the beginning of chapter 9. When Dhruva Maharaj saw his Lord just in front of him, he was greatly agitated and offered him obeisances and respect. He fell flat before him like a rod and became absorbed in love of Godhead. Dhruva Maharaj in ecstasy looked upon the Lord as if he were drinking the Lord with his eyes, kissing the lotus feet with his mouth, and embracing the Lord with his arms. It's Iva. It's as if. That's what's going on in his heart. So his austerity and his devotion were reciprocated with by the personality of Godhead. Next, and now the Lord is going to do something especially wonderful by touching him on the forehead with his conch, because he recognizes that Dhruva wants to speak and offer prayers, but he's just a little boy and he's stunned and bewildered by the whole thing. So he just touches him on the forehead with his conch, and he then all of his senses become totally spiritualized, including his power of speech, but all the other senses. Another nice image showing the same. And here's the text. Next. Although Dhruva Maharaj was a small boy, he wanted to offer prayers in suitable language, but because he was inexperienced, he could not adjust himself immediately. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being situated in everyone's heart, could understand Dhruva's awkward position. Out of his causeless mercy, he touched his conch shell to the forehead of Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands. Next. This is an important bhakti principle. This is mercy. Dhruva Maharaj never went to any school or academic teacher to learn the Vedic conclusion, but because of his devotional service to the Lord, as soon as the Lord appeared and touched his forehead with his conch shell, automatically the entire Vedic conclusion was revealed. And his prayers indicate he understood things that many people that are academically qualified don't understand. Just because of just because of this connection with the personality of Godhead. So some of you may know the verse. If you do, you can say it with me. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. Ahaitukam. Ahaitukam means without cause. Hetu means cause. And ahaitukam means without cause. Causelessly, vairagya and jnana arise. Janiyati ashu vairagyam jnanam cha yad ahaitukam. And so knowledge and detachment arise in the heart of one who Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. From Bhakti Yoga, from engagement in devotional service to Vasudeva, Krishna, what happens? Causelessly, knowledge and detachment arise. So he didn't go to school. We go to school. But he was so gifted with bhakti and mercy that everything became revealed to him. And in his prayers, he starts to speak. And we're going to touch now on the first of his prayers. Next. His senses were completely enlivened, and then he recognized the cause of that, and he recognized the shelter that the source of that is. The shelter is the source of everything and the source of everyone and the shelter for everyone. So he was feeling connected to everyone by feeling connected to the source of everyone and everything. Next. So we're already at key number 5. There's 7. We're going to do a little review. But this next stop, the next key is his humility. And in his humility, he's expressing you who are like a kalpaka tarum. Archanti kalpaka tarum, kalpataru is a desire tree. And as a desire tree, you can give anything, including liberation from birth and death. But, next, I'm very foolish. Foolish persons like me desire sense gratification, which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. He later gives this comparison of a poor man who the king meets, and the king says, "You're a very nice man. I'd like to give you anything that you like. You name it, it's yours." And he asks for some broken grains of rice. Or the other story that Prabhupada liked to tell, this is what Dhruva said, one of these traditional stories, some lady, poor lady, her income was she would go to the forest each day, gather whatever pieces of wood had fallen to the ground, she gathered them up, put them in a rope, and carried them on her head to the marketplace and sold broken pieces of sticks. So one day, the sticks fell off her head. So she called out, "Oh, Hari Krishna." And Krishna appeared. What can I do for you? Can you put the bundle of sticks back on my head, please? So I was so foolish like that. You can give anything. Deliverance from this whole struggle of material existence, and I wanted something material. But you're so kind, even to persons like me. The kindest of the personality. You've got it. Then he speaks about the exalted position. Next. Exalted position of devotional service. And the happiness of devotional service is so fantastic that you can't even begin to compare it to the benefits that come from the mental speculator, a jnani. Next. Hello? Yeah. Doesn't show the diacritics properly. Sorry. Tavad? Tava pada padma dhyanat. Pada padma dhyanat. Meditating on your lotus feet. Or, next, hearing about your glories from the pure devotees. Kata shravanena vasyat is so unlimited, is far beyond the stage of Brahmananda. Next. So what's Brahmananda? Brahmananda, those of you that like reading Prabhupada's books, you know what Brahmananda is. It's described in Nectar Devotion. The happiness of Sayuja Mukti, becoming one with Brahman. And Prabhupada likens it in a very simple way. Supposing you're banging your head against a wall, and you do that for quite some time, and it hurts, and you stop banging your head against the wall. Ah, Brahmananda. It's the negation of material misery, but it's not the positive happiness of the soul or the living entity. It's negation of the misery. Brahmananda. There's a happiness when you stop banging your head against a wall. Or the miseries of material existence subside. And so happiness by negation is not what real happiness is. The happiness of devotional service far surpasses that. So these activities, we're conditioned souls, but we're being engaged in activities of liberated souls by this process of hearing his glories from pure devotees, meditating upon his lotus feet and seeing the nicely decorated deity form. And so he's praying for association of devotees. Because in the association of devotees, there's other nice things will happen. And so Lord Vishnu is very pleased and says, so be it. All good fortune to you, Dhruva. I know that you wanted a kingdom, so sure enough, you're going to have a kingdom. You'll rule over this planet for 36,000 years. It's Satya Yuga, so that's like 36 years of a 100-year life. And then after that, you're going to come to this planet that isn't destroyed when the universe is destroyed. That Svetadvipa place that we mentioned where Vishnu came from. You're going to go there. And you're going to reside there for forever. No birth and death. Punar janma na. So then he departs. And then next, key number 6. Oddly enough, he feels deep regret. He looks really sad because he could have gone back to Godhead, but he could have gone with Vishnu, but he has to stay here and be king for 36,000 years while Vishnu waves goodbye. How unfortunate that I came to him with this petty material desire, along with that, this revenge retaliation against his stepmother and his father. Well, you know, he felt so badly because of that wrong motivation and wanting something limited and temporary. But what could he do? Next, he speaks this way. He was ashamed and morose to think that although he had gone to Madhavan, given up the kingdom of his father, and had gotten a spiritual master like Narada Muni, he was still thinking of revenge against his stepmother and wanted to occupy an exalted position within this material world. The image is to show something that's from Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. He said, before I was desiring this piece of broken glass, and instead I got this valuable jewel. That's, you know, the association of Vishnu. This broken piece of glass is something temporary. I was desiring a kingdom. Although that was my motivation, you're so kind, you gave me your association, and now this abode, residence in the abode of Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. How foolish, how unfortunate. So he resigned himself. It was an instruction of Vishnu, so he fulfilled the instruction. He went back. He became trained by his father. He eventually matured to the stage where he became old enough and mature enough to become the king. He became king. And he ruled for the 36,000 years. There's some things that are mentioned in chapters 10 and 11, which we won't discuss because summary time doesn't permit. And then, next, he turned his kingdom over to his eldest son, and he went to Bhadrika Ashram, where he engaged in worship of the personality of Godhead. He followed similar procedures. It's still Satya Yuga, so he did his meditation practice next. And in that meditation process, he entered into a state of trance once again. Next. Because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flowed from his eyes. His heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus he immediately became liberated from material bondage. Now check this out. Next. Descending from the upper right-hand corner of our slide here, a Vaikuntha Mimana descended. And two of Lord Vishnu's associates were seated on that Vimana. It said specifically it's as big as a house. And the whole sky became illuminated by this descending Vimana. And they greeted him very warmly and said, you please Lord Vishnu very much by this and that and the other thing. And he sent us to take you to his abode. Come on aboard. No visa, no passport, no security, just get on board. So, interestingly, he didn't just get on board. He was very attached to performing his daily duties, so he did his daily duties. He took his bath and he chanted his prayers, and he did his rituals, and he saw the Vimana, he circumambulated the Vimana, he offered respects to all the sages in Bhadrika Ashram because they had been so kind to him, and now he's getting ready to get on the Vimana. Next. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental vimana, he saw death personified approaching him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death. It wasn't like, it wasn't like that. He was giving his benediction. How'd you like to be death personified? That would be a nice job. But he was giving the benediction of his lotus feet upon the head of death personified, and he was unafraid. So he got on the plane. Here it says, big as a house. And last key, number 7. He felt, wait a minute, I can't go to Vaikuntha. I can't leave my mother here. I'm so indebted to her. And she was functioning as my Pata Pradarshika Guru, or Vartma Pradarshika Guru, same meaning. She showed me the way to reach Vishnu. And so I can't leave without her. He didn't say it. He was just feeling that. But the residents of Vaikuntha, these two assistants, they could understand his mind, and they said, don't worry. Look back there. See that other vimana? That's where your mom is. And Suniti's going back to Godhead too, because she's a pure devotee like you, and your liberation means she becomes liberated too. So off he goes. Next, the vimana ascends, and in the background, that's flowers falling from the sky. The Gandharvas and demigods showered flowers and sounded musical instruments as Dhruva ascended back home, back to Godhead. And it describes the position of Dhruvaloka is above Swargaloka, but it's below Maharloka. What does that mean? There's 7 upper and 7 lower planetary systems. The lower ones are the hellish planets. And just above the hellish planets is this one. It's in the middle, more or less. And then there's 6 more. So, Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, Swargaloka. You know, from the mantra. Bhuvar and Swargaloka. And Dhruvaloka is at the topmost region of Swarga. Although it's a spiritual planet. And then the planets below Dhruva, they move, they circumambulate, they offer their respects by keeping the right to their right side, Dhruvaloka, the planet of Vishnu. And or they move around in the heavens in a clockwise direction, keeping Dhruvaloka fixed, because Dhruva means fixed or permanent. And they move around him. And then above is Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. There's 4 planetary systems above. They don't move, but the 3 planetary systems below, they move. When we look up in the sky, that's what we're seeing at night. And so the astronomy is described like that from the Vedas. And Dhruva is the presiding personality there. And so now is a little review. And we're going to end. Next. Here's our 7 keys. Rather than when some misfortune comes your way, don't react, but respond. And someone who can extend wisdom to you, a nice devotee, mature, responsible, respected village elder can help you to respond rather than reacting to some misfortune. Because at least in this case, in many cases, misfortune can be a springboard to good fortune. Then next is honesty and seeking blessings from the spiritual master. And then the third is carrying out the instructions with discipline and great determination. And then the fourth is mercy will come. Within the instruction is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or we will get strength beyond our own strength. That's important. And maintaining all the while genuine humility. Looking back upon our past before that good fortune came our way. Regret of our long-standing material hankerings and indulgences in the temporary. And staying steadfast in your execution of the path toward Krishna. And then finally is this principle of gratitude. He felt so grateful, including to his mother, but everyone and everything that had been helpful. So are you ready for next? He's busy back there in the control box. Okay, so we're going to speak now, just two more slides. There's this message that we heard several times. Shh. This message of acceptance. So next, this is from one of our Bhakti Shastri teachers in Vrindavan. This is his work. When we don't accept an undesired event, it becomes anger, like Dhruva was feeling angry. When we accept it, it becomes tolerance. Next. When we don't accept uncertainty, it becomes fear. When we accept it, it becomes adventure. Next. When we don't accept others' bad behavior towards us, it becomes hatred. When we accept it, it becomes forgiveness. Next. When we don't accept others' success, it becomes jealousy. When we accept it, it becomes inspiration. And then, last, acceptance is the key to handling life well. And Bhagavad Gita speaks of it in 1866. Next. Take shelter of Krishna. Mame kam shananam. So shananam or sharanagati or surrender has everything to do with this process where we've heard in Dhruva's life. He took shelter of his mother's words. He trusted her. Rightly so. And he followed her instruction. And then he met Narada. And he followed Narada's instruction. And then he met Lord Vishnu. And then he ruled, he followed his duties in Krishna consciousness. And then he went back to Godhead. But the starting place was really mixed, you know, dark mixed. Get back, revenge, anger, that stepmother, you know. It goes on. Now, last. Accept the key of acceptance and all the other seven keys are yours. They follow in sequence. And for us, the acceptance, last slide, is our, at least it starts with chanting, and what's the fruit of chanting is more chanting. The fruit of bhakti is more bhakti, deeper bhakti. So we have our opportunity, the gift that's been given to us, like Dhruva had the gift that was given to him by Narada and his mother. And we, the same opportunity is there for us as well. And I think I've gone past my time. So I'm going to end. Can we turn the lights on? See if there's any Well, there you are. Any comments or questions or discussion? Yes. You have a question. We have a microphone for you. That's, but it's for the recording purposes. It's even more fine. So here's the microphone.
You mentioned that we should not react. We should respond. But
yes.
Like, as per our culture, we should not respond if somebody has a bad attitude or if they have a bad behavior.
Yeah.
So we should not respond. We should be silent. So which is appropriate?
No, but remaining silent is a response. Reacting is... Now, you don't have to be silent. You can say something. You can smile. You can step back, three giant steps. You can do different things.
And how do you surrender? Like,
how do you surrender?
Like, circumstances could be different. They could be like...
Not can be. They are, always are. But surrender is what your place of shelter is. What's safe for you? It's really easy to understand surrender. You really understand lots of things by parenting. You have a child?
Yeah, I have three.
You have a, okay, so I don't, but, to your children, you're their place of shelter. If somebody says something mean to them, or they something hurts their body or their mind, they come to, what happened? You know, because there's a place of shelter. So it's really easy to understand. Krishna is our place of shelter eternally. Our attention is elsewhere. We have other shelters going on, but they're not real shelters. They're illusory shelters. So surrender means recognizing he's our place of shelter, and that so it has different elements, according to the scripture. There's six primary ones. But one of them is he's our protector. He's our well-wishing friend, right from Bhagavad Gita. And our maintenance doesn't come just from going to work and having a job and getting a paycheck, supposing that stops. The maintenance comes from this personality of Godhead. He maintains us. Ultimately, where does our ability to work come from? Where does the intelligence to do what you do come from? That can be taken from you. He's our maintainer. Where does the grains that we eat come from? From the rains. And how does the whole thing work? He's the maintainer. He's the maintainer. So they're elements of recognizing the place of shelter. And we go there because there's shelter, there's safety there.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Anything else? If there's nothing else, I have another something. Okay, here's a question up here. Let me share something. It's nice. Go ahead, give her the microphone, but let me just share this. Little eye contact for you that just asked the question. Can you see me okay? Because there's a couple of heads in the way. I can't see you. There we go. Okay. I travel in China, and one of the nice things about traveling in China is I don't speak Chinese. So when stuff goes on, I really can't understand by language. I can only understand by facial expression and, you know, body language and things. So I was in an airport, and there was a small child, not just crying, screaming. You know, there's a difference. And so different mothers tried to come and comfort the child. No way. The child had to have mommy. And so the screaming got louder, and it went on for some time. And then mom and dad, I don't know where they went, and they were frantically looking around for their child, and they saw the child. And as soon as the child was in the arms of the mother, count to three, and the crying stopped. There was only one place that was the shelter that was going to keep that child feeling protected and safe and secure, in the arms of her mother, or his mother. That's Sharanagati. There's only one place where we're feeling safe and protected, and that's where there is not, you know, there is the power to protect. There's the already existing relationship protection, and we're there. And then anything can happen, and it's okay. We may say, ouch, or whatever. You stepped on my toaster. Could you please, you know, move your foot? It hurts. So, but, you know, so we don't have to be silent. We can say, you know, it hurt when you stepped on my foot. You know, I'm not, and just letting you know, it hurts. Please remove your foot. Anyway. But shelter, surrender is that place where it's just natural for us. And there's nothing else that's going to work. Although we may try. And there's some relief, some mitigation, but it's not the same. Okay? Now, go ahead.
Maharaj, I was wondering, Mother Suniti went back to Vaikuntha. So Dhru Maharaj was thinking about her. What happened to Mother Suruchi? So,
what happened to his stepmother?
Yeah.
Well, Lord Vishnu said what happened before it happened, and then it happened. And that was it was found in chapter 10. Her son, Uttam, was not married, and he was off hunting in the forest, and one yaksha saw him and killed him. And his mother went mad because of her attachment to her son, and she went searching for her son. She entered into a forest fire and burned. When Vishnu told Dhruva that that would happen before it happened, the commentator says, I know that you've given up your enmity towards her, but you had this feeling towards her before, and she made an offense. And it was a big offense. It was a big offense. And so the laws of nature are just. She received the fruit of her big offense. It's not like, you know, we can just go, Krishna's going to take care of that person. We don't wish such things upon such persons. But nature has its way at the same time. Okay? Anyone else? Yes. Pass the microphone, please.
Maharaj, when Dhruv was not allowed to sit on his father's lap, and his father, did his father react or respond or did not do anything?
What's the word, passive aggressive? He froze. And he regretted it later, but during that moment, he was, you want to know between react and respond. He was reacting. He didn't take higher principle. He was just reacting. I don't want to get into the disfavor of Suruchi, and so.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Now I see in the audience, we're going to end, but I see in the audience, one devotee who asked this question about Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Yes, I see. So I did some research, and, can we go to the next slide? I contacted Keshava Bharati Maharaj, who is in Vrindavan at Govardhan Project, and he wrote back. Because I said, this is what I understood from Gopi, what I repeated to you. And he said, the team working on Brihat Bhagavatamrita, had discussed this, and it's embedded in these verses, so you can go and look. But it's an actual text of Jaimini Rishi speaking his commentary on Mahabharata, as Vyasa had his Mahabharata. Jaimini had another Mahabharata, the personalities described in his own way. Jaimini, there's a little history, he's the disciple of Vyasa, who was entrusted with Samaveda, and we know from Bhagavad Gita that Samaveda is the best of the Vedas. He was a Vaishnava. He was particularly celebrated for prayers to Lord Jagannath. And his Mahabharata is a very special one. And Jaimini said, wow, I've heard Mahabharats before, but this is really special. Is there a supplement? The technical word is kila, not exactly commentary. It's kila. It's a supplement. And Jaimini spoke that supplement. So then Keshava Bharati didn't give a long letter, but apparently, like, where did Sanatan Goswami come up with a copy of this literature that Jaimini Rishi spoke to Janamejaya, the son of Maharishi Parikshit? And the answer apparently is Sanatan Goswami realized it. And Keshava Bharati Maharaj wrote, I have no reason to doubt Sanatan Goswami. That was the response. He realized it. So it's something like, those of you that are familiar with Sri Brahma Samhita, I think I gave that seminar here. Brahma Samhita, did I give? Yeah. Seattle, not here. Maybe sometime I should do that. So Sri Brahma Samhita says that there's two stages of mature chanting. One of those stages of mature chanting is mantra upasana. Upasana means worship. And in the mature stage of mantra upasana, Jiva Goswami writes, and Bhaktisiddhanta takes from his commentary, that it's like a lake. And a particular pastime of the Lord, it's like an image, a painting of a pastime. And one through mantra, one can meditate on that pastime. It's like a lake. And you can visualize in your mind the pastime. You can visualize in your mind the pastime through mantra upasana. And then there's a further stage. The lake often will be formed by a river. And you can enter into the lake and then enter into the river that's flowing. And then he says this is swarasaki, which is where you can experience and participate in the pastimes of Krishna through mantra meditation. And Jiva Goswami writes, even in the present time, there are persons who can accomplish that. You know, those persons include Sanatan Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami and Rupa Goswami and himself, Sanatan Goswami. Their writings disclosed pastimes of Krishna that are not in the Bhagavatam and they're not in other Puranas. Rather, they were pastimes they actually participated in and then came back to our plane of consciousness and described them. Amazing, huh? I'll give two examples. One example is Mother Janava. She had that capacity also. Those of you who have been to Vrindavan, how many have been to Vrindavan? lots of you. When you go to Vrindavan, one of the places everyone goes to is Govardhan Hill. And many times when you go to Govardhan Hill, you'll go to Radhakund Shyamakund. So one of the places when you go to Radhakund is the Gopinath Temple. And the Gopinath Temple was discovered by Janava, because Janava was married to Lord Nityananda. And when Lord Nityananda left, she had never been to Vrindavan. She went to Vrindavan. And when she went to Vrindavan, one of the places she went to was Radhakund. And as she was walking around Radhakund, she stopped at one place. She saw Gopinath and said, a temple for Gopinath should be built right here. So they built the temple of Gopinath. And then she, Janava, went to by the side of Radhakund, so they built a little extension that goes out into Radhakund for her, and a little tree and a little bhajan kutir place. And she came back in after one day chanting, as was describing, a bridge across Radhakund, where Radha and Krishna and the gopis were sporting together. Now, when I go to Radhakund, I don't see any bridge. Maybe some of you have seen, but Janava saw. Janava saw. And so there's a place, not commemorating the bridge, but a place where she would sit and chant. There are devotees that are more advanced than we are. And those more advanced than we are devotees can see things we cannot see. The pastimes of Krishna are called Nitya Lila, because they're eternally going on, but they're aprakat. They're not seeable after Krishna's departure is gone. So he takes that vision away. But they're visible for elevated devotees. Those in this Swabrasa Ki stage. So all of this is, there's other examples. Sanatan Goswami was such a person. He received this whole Brihat Bhagavatamrita. This is now those who worked intimately on this project. Sanatan Goswami is essentially saying this. This conversation between Jaimini Rishi and the son of Maharishi Parikshit, Janamejaya, and parts 1 and 2, he realized it, he wrote it down. So it's an actual text. There's the answer to your question. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai. Ki jai. Let's thank His Holiness Prabhupada Maharaj with a loud Haribol! Haribol! Haribol!